Well, hello everybody. We have another rendition of the No Look Pass. I am Brett Shishkoff. I have Mr. Brian Hawkins sitting across the table from me. Why don't you say hello to the lovely people out there today?
Hello, lovely people. How's your sports day?
Well, mine is doing really, really well. I'm excited. We have Olympic sports going on. They're everywhere. If you're, look on any channel that NBC pretty much has, there is something to watch. From the, popular swimming and gymnastics to the not-so-popular sports like, maybe archery or table tennis and badminton.
Don't forget the synchronized platform swimming.
You mean diving?
Diving, yes.
Yeah. It is... There's a wide variety of sports for all walks of life. I've definitely been paying attention to the beach volleyball. Our ladies are doing really, really well.
So are the men.
The men are doing well also. Rio seems to be, they call their second sport after soccer is volleyball. That mm-hmm. It's their spiritual home is what I heard on the telecast last night. I don't know how true that is. It was actually started here in the States, in LA. So if they want to call it the spiritual home, well, fair enough. But how about we just talk about that match last night with Ross and Jennings, Carey?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a great match. They make a very good team because Ross, boy, she's lightning quick. She'll dig balls out of the sand, and then in the next motion, she's up on her feet at the net looking to kill the ball. And, of course, her partner is capable of stuffing anything that comes across the net. So they're tough to beat.
Yeah, if they play like they did last night against the teams moving forward, the Brazilian team is supposed to be a tough team to beat. I don't know. I think there's a good chance that she's going to add another gold and Ross will be able to have herself a gold for the first time. In the last Olympics, her team was actually playing Jennings and they went gold and silver where was the last Olympics? Was that
London?
London, yes. So they won't be able to do gold and silver, so hopefully they'll be able to get that gold. Other than that, last night we saw the gymnastics. We had our men's team kind of have some troubles at the beginning of their four routines, kind of had some trouble, and then on the pommel horse, it was a little difficult for them to make that ground back up. They tried, but in the end, it was not enough for them to medal in the team side of things.
No. I feel very bad for Leva. He started off on the high bar with a great routine, and that's supposed to be his specialty, but he tried one particular move, and he couldn't grasp the bar, and he fell. And you could tell that he was definitely affected by it. All of them were.
Yeah, it's not the end for the guys. They still have their individual events and whatnot, so there's still medal hopes for them. But you always want to do well with the team. And so our hope for that is actually the women, and they'll be moving forward. I think there'll be some tonight, if I remember reading that correctly. We also had the basketball team play last night against Venezuela. Tell me, Brian, was it a good game, or did we blow the Venezuelans out?
Well, I'll tell you. The score, 113-69.
Oh.
So I think a 57-point blowout of China, followed by another blowout. We started off slow, the American team did, but they picked it up. And, of course, with Tom Thibodeau on the team there, it's not like they're not going to play defense. So they were able to do that. And they could get a victory.
Yeah, I heard it looked like Jimmy Butler helped spark the team a little bit. Our guy from the Bulls, which is good to see. We weren't entirely sure how much he was going to play with the rest of that team having a lot of good players on it, but Jimmy Butler seemed to be the spark last night, which is good to see that depth is for the USA team is going to bode well for them moving forward through the tournament.
Yeah, he had 17 points. And he and Paul George were really the ones who led the attack for Team USA. Paul George had 20 points. And, of course, Carmelo Anthony scored 14 points, which puts him past Michael Jordan into third place. Now, Michael Jordan only played in one Olympics, as far as I can remember. But he scored enough that he was in third place behind LeBron James and David Robinson until Carmelo passed him. Now, Carmelo, I believe this is his fourth Olympics. And as a matter of fact, he's more accomplished as an Olympian than he is as an NBA player. He's got four gold medals. So I guess maybe that's his legacy until he wins an NBA championship.
Yeah, and I'm sure Carmelo is hoping that this year is the year now that the Knicks now have some help for him, bringing over Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. I'm sure he's hoping that that's going to pay off to them making a strong playoff push. We shall see what happens with that. Their next matchup is against Australia. Should be a tougher team. They've got five NBA players on their team, so it should be a more competitive game to a certain extent. Yeah. I think the main team that the U.S. team is worried about is probably Spain, I would say. They were the team that was there last time in the finals with them, and so that's probably the way it's going to go again, even though Spain was upset the other day. Which was not something that I saw coming. I thought they were going to get through the pool play without being scathed, but that did not happen. But that's why they play the game.
Yeah, that should be a pretty good game. Australia has never won an Olympic medal in men's basketball. And as you said, they have five NBA players. But see, that's the thing with the USA team. The USA team can field an entire roster of NBA players, whereas other teams, other countries have trouble doing that. So even if a team like Australia has five, and then, of course, they have to be top players, other teams can't bring players off the bench that in any other situation would be a starting player. So that's the thing that's tough with the USA. Oh, and I should correct myself. Even though Anthony is a four-time Olympian, he's only won two gold medals. So this would be his third. He's, like I said, more accomplished in the Olympics than in NBA play. So we'll have to see going forward what happens with the USA, but I think they're all good as long as they don't get overconfident.
This is very true. A lot of people were kind of saying that with this team, that this is the B squad USA team, but even with the B squad USA team, it's better than most A teams on the other countries' basketball teams, just because of the depth that we have, because of the NBA. There was such a big pool of players, and I'm not too concerned about it as long as they keep their head on straight and are able to concentrate on what is at hand of winning another gold. I think they'll be fine. They just can't take off a night, because that's when a team will sneak up on you, and then you find yourself in maybe a bronze medal game instead.
Yeah, well, the only player who's not there, or players, I would say, would be LeBron James and Stephen Curry. I can't think of anyone else above those two who people consider an A-lister who's not there. Everybody else, I think, I don't see it as being a team that has less talent than the NBA could put out on the floor.
Right. Is there any other sports that you've been watching that you seem to, you know, want to turn on each night as of the Olympics starting. We're only, let's see, this will be the fourth day for the Olympics. Seems to be your sport this time around?
Well, you know, I'm kind of surprised at some of the edginess that we're seeing with the swimming competition. Mm-hmm. Last night we saw, I believe his name is Le Gros. I think he's from France. He definitely kind of got in the face of Michael Phelps while they were preparing for their semifinal in the butterfly, the 200 butterfly semifinal. And he was shadow boxing, and the faces that Phelps made, you could see he wasn't pleased. And so you have that competition. Then earlier, you had Lily King call out Yulia Efimova, saying she shouldn't be there. She's not a fan. Lily's not a fan of Yulia.
Do you know why that is? Well, it's actually because of the...
Yeah, the doping.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She was caught doping twice, and then she appealed, and then they allowed her, literally the first day of competition, they allowed her to start to be in the swimming competition. And so a lot of, not just the United States, but the rest of the countries are upset that the Olympic Committee decided to let her back in after the two times of
doping.
Of the doping, yeah.
And the color guy for the swimming competition, Rowdy Gaines, made it very clear early on, every time that she swam, he said she shouldn't be there.
Yep.
He mm-hmm. stopped doing that. I don't know if he was told to, but it's pretty... pretty evident that she's a lightning rod. And it was interesting when they had the medal ceremony after Lily King won the 100 breaststroke. Yulia was on the podium with Lily, and she had to stand next to her and kind of hug, you know, how they usually do.
Yeah.
But Lily kept looking straight ahead as if she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have both of those things going on. And normally, swimming is not what I call a get-in-your-face type of sport. But things are kind of different. And also, it's nice to see that some local talented swimmers have done well. Connor mm-hmm. Dwyer, who grew up in Winneka, and he swam at Loyola Academy in Wilmette. He won a bronze medal. And Olivia Smoglia. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up in Glenview, and she was at Glenbrook South. She didn't medal in the 100 backstroke. She finished sixth, but still, just to be there. So
it's good to see the local talent, local sports stars pop out in the Olympics. It's fun to see. I know that we have a few others and a couple of the other sports that we'll be seeing down the line. But mine for the Summer Olympics a couple of years ago, I lost my sight. But before that, I actually was getting into the archery and the weird out there type of sports. And so this year, water polo. That's one that I enjoy. And so the American team, unfortunately, the other day, they lost against Croatia, which was the gold medal team. I think they played last night, but I don't remember if they won or not. But they needed to win the next three games in their pool to make sure that they put themselves in a position to medal. I know last Olympics they placed eighth, so they're looking to do better. They changed almost their entire team. They went younger, have a new coach. So... That's my sport is watching the water polo, and I enjoy it quite a bit. I think we'll move on from the Olympics. We talked about basketball already, so we'll stick with basketball and talk about the Bulls. I came in this morning and told Brian about another rumor. A couple weeks ago we were talking about Russell Westbrook, which Brian pretty much shot down right away. But this week, the one that I came in with,
I like that one.
Is DeMarcus Cousins. And here's why it's interesting. We have Rondo, and Rondo played with Cousins last year, and they became really, really good friends. And Cousins looks at Rondo as kind of a mentor to him. And so that is one reason. Cousins is also not a very happy camper being a king. He's had nothing but issues with the coaching staff over there, and they just haven't done anything while he's there. And he is one of the best centers in the game. His issue is he has some off the court type stuff. He likes to complain to the referees instead of getting back in the play. But when he is in a game, he can take over a game. Last year, he actually had a game with 56 points, which beats the record that was there for the Kings, which was Chris Webber had a 51-point game. So he has their scoring record for the Kings, which is 56 points, and he can have a few of those. He's had a few 50-point games before that. So if that did happen, I'd be really excited because that's the first time in my memory of a big man coming to Chicago that could literally dominate most of the league. And having that inside presence is something that I always like. I like having just a power guy that you can rely on, throw it in. You don't have to always rely on the three-point shot. And it opens up your three-point shooters as well. So what do you think of that? Do you think it's a possibility? And what pieces do you think that the Bulls would be willing to give up to bring DeMarcus Cousins in? What would be realistic that the Kings would want?
I would think that any of the young players would be available. The only untouchable, I think, would be Jimmy Butler. Well, untouchables. Jimmy Butler, Rondo, and also Wade. But everybody else, I think, in order to make the deal go, would probably be available. So the Kings could get younger, whatever they needed to do. Maybe even the Bulls might have to give up a draft pick to make that work. But I don't know if Paxson and Foreman are savvy enough to do something like that. They might have to call the Cubs and talk to Epstein to figure out, okay, we got this guy. How can we get him? But we'll see. I mean, that would be interesting if they could pull that off. That certainly would put them in contention, and it would make losing Derrick Rose and creating what could be a very good team in New York take the sting out of that.
Oh, most definitely.
And, you know, but it looks like, I don't know, it seems like the Bulls don't have a plan, but all these things are swirling around and something good might come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. If you know, like you said, Cousins can be somewhat temperamental, and if he didn't like Sacramento, he may not like the Bulls management after a while. I mean, this is a team, if you'll remember, that went out and signed Ben Wallace, and then when he got here, they wouldn't allow him to wear his headband. So who knows? But if they could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, a couple of the pieces that they were talking about, at least in this article I was reading from Hoops Habits, was that the possibility of Portis, Mirotić, McDermott, or even Valentine.
Right.
Those were the four pieces, because those would be more of the younger pieces of maybe what they would be looking for if they wanted to go younger. The other thought that we were possibly thinking before I read the rest of the article was Taj Gibson, maybe as like big man for big man. But if they want to go younger, that's not Taj.
Well, that would be Portis.
Mm-hmm.
I only bring up the headband thing because DeMarcus does wear a headband. So.
Well, so does Rondo. So yeah. We'll see how that goes. And I don't even know why that's a big deal to wear a headband. Like, if you want to, a sweatband, they call them. Then why not? I think that's about it for the Bulls. It is the off season. You know, we did talk about the Olympics and Jimmy Butler, and so there really isn't too much else going on. It's relatively quiet. But we felt that it was good to kind of touch on that and dream for at least today.
Yeah, so everybody put up good thoughts and think of that trade happening, and maybe it'll come true.
Yeah, because that, honestly, if that piece came here, I really could see that as them being in, at the very least, an Eastern Conference final against the Cavs because of how weak the Eastern Conference is still. I think that that could put you from just making the playoffs to making it deep into a playoff run. So that would be nice. I would like to see us get back to a conference final, and if not, an NBA final, which would be great. But I don't want to go too far ahead of myself. But it's nice to hope and hear these little rumors pop up every now and then, especially when it's your team that you want to see do well.
That's right.
I think we will move on to the Blackhawks, since both of these teams are still in their offseason. We are a little bit less than a month away before preseason starts for the Blackhawks. I don't know if you saw this or not, but I believe it was last night, the NHL Network released the top 20 forwards for the NHL, and two of our guys, two of our big-name guys, I bet you couldn't guess which two were on this list. And one was number one, and the other one was number five.
Duncan Keith.
That is not a forward, so we'll let that one right. pass. We'll give you a mulligan on that one. Don't overthink it. He won the MVP last year.
I would know. Taves?
That's one. He was number five. And then the other one? He goes by the number 88. Patrick Kane.
Patrick Kane, ah. What an
Patrick idea. Kane was number one.
That was so obvious, I didn't want to say.
It wasn't a trick question.
No.
But yeah, we had Kane and Taze on that list, which is really, you know, we kind of expected. They're always up there at the top for scoring, and Taze is known for kind of just being that all-around great player of being able to play on both ends of the ice. And Kane's defense has gotten better over the last few years, where he was mainly an offensive player. But he has become a great passer, and he has defensively gotten a lot better as well. So it makes sense why both of those guys would be at the top of that list. Other than that, have you heard anything else from Blackhawks camp?
No, just waiting for them to get started. Hopefully they'll be very well rested, having not gone deep into the playoffs like they have a couple past years. And so they'll be able to come out, and hopefully they'll be healthy enough to, you know, this year get back to the finals.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to the season as well, seeing how our boys bounce back from that early playoff exit. But we're only a month and a half away before preseason starts, and then shortly after that, the regular season. So we will have hockey soon. Also, what will be happening even sooner is the Bears. We have the Bears starting preseason football on Thursday.
Yeah, they broke camp at Olivet Nazarene University, so they're coming north. And of course, some people are hurt. A lot of people are hurt. But I don't know. I don't know where the Bears are right now with all those injuries. Are you optimistic? Or
I am. I still believe in what John Fox and that and him as putting a good coaching staff together. And I believe with them, what I'm excited about is to see Kevin White. That's one that I will be looking forward to, like, keeping an ear open for sure on how well is he moving around on the field against the Broncos, because, you know, starting off your preseason against the Super Bowl champs, you know, it's only going to be one or two series, but we haven't seen him yet. And so I just want to see at least maybe a pass or two to him, and hopefully he catches both, just to see how he's reacting, you know, shake off some of that rust, those type of things. And then, you know, what that defense is looking like for those first two series, just to kind of see is what we're hearing coach speak during training camp, or are they that tough, bruising defense that we're used to for Bears teams in the past? And so I am hopeful, and we shall see about the running back position. That's going to be also something that I'll be keeping an eye and an ear on, is who's going to be the back? Is it going to be Jeremy Langford? Is it going to be Sharkeese Rogers? They also have Howard, who is sounding like he's more of that bruising style back. So they have three or four guys that's in that backfield that realistically – any one of them show something, They could be the starter. It's still up in the air, and no one said it's definitely a Jeremy Langford backfield. So it could also just be a running back by committee. So there's a few things that I'm excited about to see where the Bulls are going to, or Bears are going to go. If those pieces stay healthy and, you know, Zach Miller comes back and he's healthy, he's still recovering from, it was the concussion, right?
Right.
So, you know, players come back from concussions relatively quick enough. Like, some of them, they do linger, but most of the time it's a couple weeks and they're back. I believe with Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White, Zach Miller, and then one of those running backs is going to be able to do enough, or between the two or three of them, they should be able to keep some pressure off of Jay Cutler, because that's what is going to help keep pressure, is getting an established running game. So we shall see how the Bears do moving forward. But I'm just excited. It's football, baby. Yeah. It's back.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm interested to see Kevin White as well. And another guy, Mark Mariani, he had a, I thought, pretty good season last year. Mm-hmm. He had 19 of his 22 catches went for first downs, and 11 of those came on third down. So, you know, he's a clutch guy that
possession,
you used to see.
Yeah.
You know, like teams with Denver and Seattle, and now the Bears have him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's kind of like our Jordy Nelson, I think, if I could say that. But, I'm interested in seeing the wide receiver core, how Cutler is playing these days. What's going to happen with that offensive line with Grasso going down, and they have to replace him. Who did they replace him with? Larson.
It's two rookies, I believe, that they're going to be trying out, both of them, seeing which one reacts better as the center, and then the other one will stay at their position that they're used to playing.
And then, of course, Charles Leno Jr. Now, every time I hear Charles Leno Jr., I think Jay Leno, and, you know, I'm waiting for the jokes. But he is supposed to be one of the Bears' offensive line coach's favorites, and he feels that he's ready, and he trusts him, and he's a good enough football player, where there are some doubts by other people. So we'll see how that works out. And also, the Bears want a more big plays from their secondary. So there's going to be a lot of mm-hmm. pressure on them to make turnovers, intercept, break up passes, that kind of thing. Now, as far as the running backs are concerned, I think it will be by committee. I don't think any one of them can do all the things that the Bears want done well enough to just have one guy in there. And John Fox in the past has shown that he likes to have multiple backs available to him. So I think we'll probably get the best of all of those guys at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And then the linebackers, we'll have to see. I'm very excited to see Danny Trevathan and Terrell Freeman. And also John Timu. These mm-hmm. guys are supposed to be faster. And, you know, Fox loves tough football players. And there's been a lot of fights in Bears camp. And so they're pretty chippy right now. They need to play a game. So fortunately, they can do that Thursday night and get some of that aggression out and come together as a team and focus on the other teams and not just beating each other up.
Yeah, it's always exciting. I enjoy preseason because you get to look at some players that are the up-and-comers of, like, okay, this guy might not be the key guy now, but you can kind of start to see, okay, this is a guy that you can have as some extra depth at maybe it's wide receiver or linebacker or whatever position. And so even if they don't make the team for the Bears, you could see them on another team. And so that's what's kind of exciting, is just to be able to see where some of these players might end up. And, you know, they're trying to keep their football hopes alive, a lot of them. And so I always look forward to this time of the year. I know a lot of people don't really like how long the preseason is. I don't like that the starters only go in for a series or two, but you need to keep your guys healthy. So I understand that part of it. But it's football. I am happy. And the regular season is literally a month away.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But you started to get into an area of a pet peeve of mine, talking about getting a chance to see some of the younger players, up-and-coming players. A lot of times these broadcasts feature sideline interviews, especially during the second half, no matter how good the game is or how bad it is. So you don't get a chance to necessarily see some of the younger players perform. And that's important, especially if you participate in fantasy football. Mm-hmm. You can develop a list after seeing players in games like these, preseason games, as to who you might look to acquire if your main guy that you draft goes down and can't play for mm-hmm. the rest of the season. So a lot of times I'm interested in seeing these young players, and you know, they could go to a different team and anything can happen. But if they could just get rid of those interviews, I'd be a lot happier.
I don't think the interviews are too bad. It's when you're doing them all the time, and that's what happens, is you have so many sideline interviews that it is taking away from why people tune into the game, which is to watch the football.
Right.
And not sit there and talk to the starter or the coach or the assistant coach of replay. Like, no one cares about what that person has to say. Like, let's just... it's football. Let's do it. You were telling me that you were watching a classic game a while back, and then you watched a more recent game, yeah. And the style of the way that the telecasts are now, that it's a lot of shine and production and making everything just fast movement and not really paying attention to the game all the time, and they're trying to fill in all the gaps when the guys are in the huddle. And so it is a new way of football, and they're trying to just keep people entertained, both men, women, children. And so I think that's why they probably have sped up with lots of shininess and advertisements and all those type of things. So, I can't wait for the start of the season, and at least we get something this week. Unfortunately, we had a cancellation of a football game, which doesn't happen. It never, like, I don't remember a game ever really getting canceled. And so, especially the Hall of Fame game.
Right. I mean, even when President Kennedy was assassinated, they still played.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but it would have been dangerous for the players because the field was not in good enough shape. I can't believe that that field is AstroTurf. I thought they got away from all of that, or some sort of turf.
Right.
But no, it isn't. So they used the wrong kind of paint on the field, and made it hard and wasn't good to play on.
I know Brett Favre was part of the inductees this year.
Right.
Who else was part of that? Do you remember?
Tony Dungy.
Dungy. Okay.
I always like to call him Dungy. I don't know why. and also Marvin Harrison.
Okay.
And those are the only three that I can remember.
Okay.
But there was quite a few folks who, and some names that I was surprised, you know, that they were getting in just now. I thought that they would have already been in.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I think one of them was Dick Stanfield. And he played a long, long time ago.
Uh-huh.
But no, those are the only names that I can remember, and I don't have a list here, so.
Okay. Well, either way, Tony Dungy, great coach, great guy, actually, as well. Like, every time I hear him talking, I seems to be just have a great head on his shoulders. And Harrison?
Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, that's a good receiver right there. Him and Peyton Manning were a dynamic duo that you knew when it was getting within the 20 red zone, there was a good chance that it was going to be a Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison connection. And, you know, in a few years, Peyton Manning will be there as well to join those two.
First ballot for sure.
Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind. One of the smartest football players that has ever played the game. And so, we were talking about announcers a little bit about football, and And that's one that I would like to see is Peyton Manning. If he actually became an announcer, I would love to just be able to hear the way that he breaks down a game. We will actually move on from preseason to actual two teams who are in season. One doing really, really well and on a playoff push. The other one, we don't know where they're at. Chicago White Sox are... That's basically all I can say at the moment is just exasperation of I don't understand that team. I had such high hopes for them moving in the beginning of the season. They had such... It seemed like they had such good talent. They had a good mix of...
They still do.
They have good talent. They're just not showing up. And so...
And I'll tell you where they are.
Okay.
They are in next to last place. They're 53-58. Of course, they're under 500. 10 games back. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games, and they lost their last game that they played. And so, they were playing Baltimore.
Right.
But, it's just a puzzle.
It's crazy to think that they're, you said it was 53-58?
Yes.
So they're 5 games under 500. That means the team that's in first place in their division is only 5 games over 500, which is not, you know, not that good if you think about it. For most of the time, like teams that are in first place, they're probably 10 to 15 games above 500 most of the time. So what that tells me is that entire division is beating the crap out of each other. They are literally just, they play each other a lot, and they're just having trouble beating one another. It's very competitive within the division. The Sox don't play their division very well, so anytime that the Sox seem to play an Indians, Tigers, Royals, the outcome normally isn't very good. They seem to be doing okay against the Twins as of late. There was a while where the Twins were their bugaboo team, that anytime they played the Twins always had their number. But that hasn't been for a few years. Now it's the Indians and Royals and Tigers seem to be the team that just this year they have no answer to how to beat these teams or win a series against the teams in their own division. And when you can't win in your division and that's where you play a lot of games, you're going to have a hard time winning a division.
Well, yeah, there are 7 teams that they'd have to climb over to get to a wild card, and that includes the Kansas City Royals, who have an identical record as the White Sox, and also Detroit. Detroit is 61-50. And I don't know. It's an easier task to get the wild card because they're only 8 games back as opposed to trying to win their central division.
Right.
But... the way things are going right now, I don't know if it could be pulled off. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll get hot. Maybe Abreu will, start hitting and get back over 300. Then some other guys will start to contribute more. But right now, through Monday, there's only, 1 White Sox player who is batting over 300. And that's Melky Cabrera.
Okay.
And, other than that, as far as home runs, of course, Frazier has 30 now. And the next highest total is 14 by Abreu. So I don't know. Maybe they figured Abreu out and he didn't change up enough.
Uh-huh.
And the pitchers in the American League have figured out what he's about, so they're able to pitch him well enough to hold him down. But I don't know. It looks like they have a decent enough lineup, and they've got pitching.
Yep.
They've got, I don't know. It's, like I said, it's a puzzle.
Yeah. Just within talking about the Sox over these last few minutes, it felt like the air got sucked out of the room. So I want to move on to something happier, and a little bit more hopeful. And that's the Cubs, which I never really thought, I'm not a Cubs fan, but I never really thought that I would say hopeful and having hope for Cubs. But this year it is. It's a team that, you know, they were struggling a little bit before the All-Star break, but I think that they kind of, they got that rest in. They were able to kind of get that intensity back of, all right, here's our playoff push. Let's get it done. And they seem to be doing pretty well. Jorge Soler just came back, so that does help. He was back over the weekend, and it sounded like he did pretty well.
Yeah,
he bounced right back into the lineup and was able to contribute, which is always good. You worry that when a guy's off for, I think it was, what, 2 months that he was out for?
Right.
Something like that for a hamstring issue. You worry that that whatever he had before the injury sometimes leaves a player, and that takes him a while to bounce right back in. But it wasn't the case for Mr. Soler. And how's the rest of the team looking like? You were giving me averages for the Sox. What's the Cubs hitting looking like, and how's the pitching doing?
Yeah, I was just looking at that. They only have one player on the active roster that's averaging over 300, and that's Caesar. But they have a couple of guys, actually three guys, who are hitting 285 or better. And they've got a couple hitting 279 or 277 or better.
Okay.
So, yeah, their hitting is doing well. Montero is not hitting well. He's only a .190, but then he doesn't play every day.
Right.
And their home run totals look healthy. Their slugging percentage, off the charts. On-base percentage, same thing. So they're clicking on all cylinders. Now, to put the air back in the room, listen to these numbers.
All right.
The Cubs have the best record in baseball. They're 69-41. And they are 9-1 in their last 10 games. And they're on a 7-game winning streak. So the thing I noticed last year about the Cubs, it seemed at some point that they stopped necessarily playing their competition when they would go out on the field. But by that I mean that they seemed to be interested in trying to play the game as well as they could, mm-hmm. and trying to get the most out of their own abilities. And whatever team they were playing was just matter of fact, incidental, it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to try and play the game as well as they could. And, you know, if you think about it, when you go into a game with a mindset like that, it doesn't matter who you play. Because you're really competing against yourself, and you're trying to pick up your teammates. So no other team can really get into your head, because for you, you're on a different level, on a different plane. And if they can get back to that, I think, it's definitely going to help them get through the second half, as if they need any help. But it seems like they're there already.
Yeah, I think with this trade deadline just passing, and we spoke about the pickups that they ended up getting for the bullpen help, mainly, is what they ended up doing. That was a spot on that team that I was extremely concerned about. I thought the bats were going to be able to do pretty much what they did last year. So I wasn't too concerned. Like, there just seems to be certain pitchers, certain days that team, you know, because they hit for a lot of power. But they also seem to, now this year, being able to do a little bit more station-to-station baseball when they need to, which is good. And that's what you're going to need, especially in playoff baseball. You're not going to always be able to win by the home run. So when you can be able to move those guys along, that really does help to get your guys in scoring position and then moving it along. And that's the thing that, you know, we talked about last week about the Sox, is that the scoring, runners in scoring position, is bad for the Sox. But the Cubs seem to be able to get those guys in when they need to, and being able to get those wins that most teams struggle with. And they have a strong lineup up and down, except for the catcher's position, which is normally the weak spot on most teams. Like, the catcher spot seems to be the one that most teams have trouble finding a catcher that can be able to hit over even 250. So him being around 200 or so average wise, that's not entirely unusual. But I've been excited just that, you know, Epstein seems to, as fans, it seems sometimes we're able to be outside the organization. We can see what's wrong with the team. Epstein seems to be able to see the same thing that us as fans, we can see and say, hey, here's our weak, these are our weak spots. We need to shore this up a little bit. And he went out and he definitely did that. Like, all he was concentrating on for the trade deadline was literally just back end pitching. They picked up what, 3 or 4 guys for their bullpen to shore up that back end, because right. they were really struggling. And he even, and I think that it was kind of good that they went on that little slump before the All-Star break, because it magnified that, okay, we played some good teams here that we probably are going to see in the playoffs, be it, you know, the Mets, San Francisco, maybe even the Cardinals again, who knows. But it made him realize, okay, this back end, we need that type of help. And once you get that, Cubs are going to be tough. They're going to be a tough team to beat. I think that there's still other teams in the National League that could give them some troubles, maybe. But I think they did enough with last year in the offseason, and then here at the trade deadline, being able to pick up those few arms that were definitely necessary. It makes me a little bit more confident about that team making a deeper run, where before the all those trades and pickups happened, I wasn't really on the Cubs bandwagon of being a possibility of winning a World Series. I thought they would have puttered out by the time they got into the playoffs. They would have probably done about the same thing that they did last year. I don't see that happening now.
Right. Well, you mentioned other teams beating them. New York, the Mets, they're only 57-54, and so in their Eastern Division. The only other team that's close to the Cubs right now in the National League would be Washington, the okay. Nationals. They have mm-hmm. 66 wins, and they're leading their division. But we'll have to see. Maybe that could be, just think of that for the National League pennant, Washington and the Cubs. Now, I know you... thinking San Francisco is going to come out of the bunch and somehow figure into the end of this, because they win every other year.
Right.
And they do have pitching.
Yep.
And then that's possible, definitely. So it's somebody to look at. They're flying under the radar right now. And I don't recall how well the Cubs have played against San Francisco when they've played. But
the last time they played, the Cubs got swept by the San Francisco.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So, but I think it might have been it might have been in the Bay. I don't think they were here. So if I remember correctly, I don't think they got swept here at Wrigley.
Yeah, so I think it'll be important for them to get home field.
Yes. I still feel like there is a good possibility that could be the National League right there, is basically if it lines up. I think it could be a Giants Cubs National League Championship Series. We'll see. But I always just like to go with the teams that have a lot of players that have gone there before, you know, to the World Series, gone on deep playoff runs and even won World Series, because that pressure can get to you sometimes, and being able to have those guys, you know, they have Baumgartner, Posey. Who was there for the last run? I'm still trying to think of what else is still there for San Francisco. I think yeah. a couple of their other pitchers are
They've
still...
got Johnny Cueto from Kansas City.
Oh, okay. Yep. He's definitely had the experience in the playoffs and World Series. So, yeah, they've got those pieces that have World Series experience, and that always does help. So those are the two teams I see in the National League. We do have in the American League, the Indians are doing really, really well. Which is actually kind of funny. We were talking about it a little bit last week about how what would happen if both the Cavaliers, Cleveland, and then they just won, and then all of a sudden you see the Indians doing well and potentially being able to get themselves in a World Series. If they won, what would Cleveland do? I was listening to a podcast yesterday where they were joking around, and they were saying, man, the Browns, I'm hopeful that they'll be in the Super Bowl as well. Then you'll get just a trifecta of all three teams all in one year being able to be getting championships after many, many years of them not winning anything.
Well, it's happened before, and sometimes one team in a market will spark They'll win a championship, and the other teams will get on the bandwagon. It happened here in Chicago, I think, in 1980. I think it was, what, with the Sting or someone like that, the soccer team. They won a championship, and then a few years later, the Bears won, and there are other championships all the way around. And then the Cubs in 83 played well. So I don't know if Cleveland will win the World Series, but they should go to the postseason and do well, go deep maybe. And then the Browns look like they're improved in Cleveland, so maybe things are turning around for Cleveland. And hopefully that'll happen here in Chicago as well. Because, you know, I have the feeling that the Bears are going to be an improved team despite all the injuries and all those other kind of things. It seems like they're getting all of that out of the way now.
Yeah.
So you have the Cubs on a roll. We've had the Blackhawks a couple years ago. We don't talk a lot about the WNBA, but the Sky went to the championship. So, you know, sometimes these things can be contagious.
Yeah. We'll see. If that did happen, that we see a possible Cubs a Cubs win of the World Series, and then if the Bulls get DeMarcus Cousins and they get to an NBA championship, you got the Bears who, if they're improved, this is definitely a fantasy filled show today. That we're talking about Bulls championship, a Bears Super Bowl win, Cubs win. Man, we're a very hopeful show today, except for them Sox. We didn't feel very good about our Sox. And we talked about all our Olympic, USA Olympic winners and looking forward to a lot more. We were already leading in the medal count as of last night. So, you know, lots of hope and upbeatness coming here at the No Look Pass. We have nothing but high hopes for all of our teams here in Chicago, looking at the bright spots instead of the negatives, which we did hit on a few negatives that were for each team. But it's always nice to just have that hope.
That's right. And since you mentioned the medal count, the United States has 19 total medals, 5 gold, 7 silver, and 7 bronze. And then there's China with 13, Japan with 10, Russia, Italy, and everybody else has less than 10. So,
what's actually kind of nice, I actually, for the first time, we have the biggest delegation for the Olympics, and we also have the most women to be on one team ever.
Yeah, I think 53% of the athletes are women, yeah.
Yep, which is really, really cool to see that, you know, we've been able to have that and move forward and being able to have that domination. Like, the women, they are crushing it, and it's because we've been able to have our programs for so long that it makes it where the women's side of things, we're ahead in over a lot of other countries that have the women participating in the Olympic Games now. We probably are one of the few countries that have been doing it as long as we have and being able to encourage that. You know, you have the main bigger countries, Russia, Great Britain, France, Germany, all of those, China, they, you know, have done it for a little while now as well. But to have the biggest delegation and also having the most women of any delegation, that's pretty awesome. I really liked seeing that. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add, Brian, before we close the show?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it all. Only I was looking at the medal count for Michael Phelps. It's quite remarkable. From Athens all the way until this Olympics, he's got a pretty nice haul. He's got 19 gold, 2 silver, and 2 bronze.
And he's already added one the other night because of the team, right? The relay? Is that what it was?
Right. The 4x100 freestyle relay.
So he's already added one. And he's looking to add another one tonight with the butterfly final for the 200. I am looking forward to seeing that one tonight just because of, what did you say the guy's name was?
LaCoy, I think.
LaCoy.
Or something like that.
He was shadow boxing in front of Michael Phelps, and I guess Michael Phelps was almost doing like a roaring face, like, and the announcer was kind of saying, "Don't poke the tiger, don't poke him." And so Phelps won that heat, and so we'll see. Last Olympics, he lost to this guy LaCroix. That's why this guy's feeling confident about himself. But he won by, it was like a tenth of a second or something crazy like that. It was literally boom,
yeah,
boom.
Five tenths.
Yeah, it was not anything that he overly dominated Phelps before. And so Phelps is motivated. And when you have an angry, motivated Phelps, I think he's going to be able to take this guy. And I have a feeling that Phelps, with this probably being his last Olympics, I would imagine so. He wants to go out with a bang, and so I think he wants to add all of the ones that he's going after. He is going to make sure that he wins the gold for each one of those. And, you know, the rest of the world's going to try and stop him, but he is more successful than he isn't. He has a whole buttload of gold medals to speak for him and how well he does when he is motivated.
Oh, let me correct myself. His name is Chad LaCroix.
LaCroix, okay.
South Africa. That's okay. Who the guy is.
Okay.
And supposedly, according to, was it Troutwig? Phelps and LaCroix are not the favorites. Or was that Rowdy Gaines? There's another guy. I can't remember his name. And I can't find it in the paper. But he's supposed to be a favorite to win, which is hard to believe going against Phelps. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I am Brett Shishkoff.
I'm Brian Hawkins.
And this is the No Look Pass. Thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with some more exciting sports talk and probably some more Olympics. So look forward to chatting with you next week there, Brian. And we will talk to you soon.
All right.